with somebody, with a family member, with a youth in your life, with your medical practitioner. This is what this...
You are tuned into a rebroadcast of a past live WGXC show.
My name is Celeste from Catskill, New York, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Everything is real. Radio. Everything is real. Radio.
Everything is real. Radio.
Everything is real. Radio.
Everything is real. Radio.
Everything is real. Radio. Radio.
The Everything is Real radio program broadcasts here on WGXC 90.7 FM every second Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Don't miss it.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by the Highway Drive-In, a four-screen drive-in movie theater in Coxsackie, New York. Information and schedule at HIWAYDriveIn.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Stephanie Monsieur of Hudson, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
This is David Choi, and you're listening to a YouTube exclusive. Thinking about you.
Everybody needs someone. Everybody needs love, love. Everybody wants something to believe in. Everybody is waiting for that sun. Makes their heart jump out. Live a life like you are dreaming. Yeah. Oh, I want that feeling. Yeah. I'm thinking about you. Are you?
Hello, good evening, my friends, family, and community at large. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Irwin, host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org enterprise, where every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why, people continue to ask me, yes, even till today, we do this so we can combat racism. And education is key for doing that, and discussion a must. And now, let's start talking here, where...
No topic is taboo.
Woo! Okay, so those courses of voices are some you know, and some you'll get to know very soon. Let me tell you a little bit about what you heard coming in. It was David Choi, as he said so on himself on his YouTube platform. He is a Korean-American singer, songwriter, producer, music composer, entrepreneur, YouTuber, and a member of parody K-pop group Big BGA, based in Los Angeles. And the reason why I wanted to have him bring in the show is because last show we were so inundated with talk, which is what we do here, that we didn't have an opportunity to play him out. And of course, he's a representative of the Asian American Pacific Islander heritage, and that was what the month was about in May. But this is June, and in June, we want to celebrate a few things. We want to celebrate dads, fathers for Father's Day that just happened this past Sunday. We want to recognize the fact that so much is going on in America today, and one of the things that makes it more important is that we share our voices together, and we combine our abilities to make sure that we are able to together bring our nation, ourselves and our nation, to a place where we are proud of ourselves and feeling good about ourselves. And I think that's what his song represented. And so, armed with that pop rock genre of music from this Asian American, we will start our segments. Our first segment is a wow segment, word of wisdom. And that word of wisdom has to do with Coco Gauff. Coco Gauff is a tennis player. She is a very young one. And there was actually a video that I saw of her behind Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. She's just a little kid running behind Serena. And now she's the winner of the French Open at Stade Roland Garros in France, where she beat the number one player. She was the number two player ranked, and she beat Aryna Sabalenka, who was the champion. And there was a big to-do about that because Aryna Sabalenka basically didn't give Coco her due. She was saying more that she wasn't her best and not really giving Coco Gauff her due. And Coco is an African-American tennis player who is coming up with the legacy that the Williams sisters opened the door for her. And being that there was that tiff, it was one that Coco said, and I'm not going to quote this very well, in her after the tennis match. She was saying that I don't really have to talk about how good I am because I show it on the court. And I think that's what we're going to do today. We're going to show how good we are by making statements that represent what we do, not by just talking, but what we actually do. And I want to end the show with what you need to do. And I hope that we have time because we have William J. Barber, who's the bishop. It was a bishop and a reverend. And he was at the No Thrones, No Crowns, No King event in Washington, D.C. on Saturday when, well, you know what else was going on. I don't even really want to mention it, at least not initially. Because we have also, like I mentioned, several voices here. We have one that I like to think of her as my friend. I can't even remember when we met, but maybe we'll talk about it a little bit. Erica Bates, she is here, and I'm going to give her a bio a little bit later in the show. And after one of the other guest talkers is Mike Green, and I had someone come and say, "Who is Mike Green?" And I said, "Oh, you don't want to miss Mike Green because he's going to be talking about something that's so relevant today, especially with the No Kings events and thinking about civil rights and the movements that we are having." So he's going to definitely put us on what I like to call common ground. And that's a play on words, and he'll explain why in his bio. And, of course, we have here our every third Tuesday of the month producer, who is an extraordinary help with everything WGXC. He's going to share some words right now about what's best for you to do to hear voices like ours on these types of networks, because our administration is cutting out the funds and we need to stay on air. So take it away, Garrett.
Well, this is why it's such a joy and an honor. I'm delighted and enthralled as always. Kimberly, to be your producer. Thanks a trillion. And this is why we need a swift blow to the status quo, and the entire structure of humanity needs to be reconstructed. As I say, one way to help these broadcasts to keep on rolling and keep on keeping on, you're welcome to contact us primarily, especially through WGXC.org, and click the donate button. We are encouraging anyone, as they please, an amount of their choosing, whatever they can do, to donate to WGXC. So it's WGXC.org/donate. Click the red donate button up at the top of the screen. And there's a couple of other ways as well. I believe there's a number you can call. That's 518-697-7400. And then there's a mailing address as well in Akron, New York. We can give out perhaps later on if people choose to do the old-fashioned way and send in a check. And also, later on in the show, we would love to have some call-ins if possible. We'll give out the call-in number.
Thank you, Garrett. So I have a question. Has the digital age brought with it inclusivity to help us as a nation unite? With access to software and learning, we can meet up, we can do all these things. That's how no kings, no crowns, no thrones got together, because we can text people now. You know, we can showcase things on video. So who better to talk about that is my first guest talker, Erica Bates. And Erica is a digital transformation strategist based in Spartanburg, South Carolina, specializing in virtual event design and content creation for SaaS companies. That software as a, what is it, software as a system? Software as a
service.
Software as a service company. Thank you. As a founder of Talk Virtual, Erica works with platforms like Hey Summit, OneStream Live, and Book Like a Boss. I have one of each of those, so you know we're on the right page. To transform brand visibility and engagement. She also leads the Virtual Summiteers peer group and hosts her own live stream series. She joins Race Talks to share how technology, when used thoughtfully, can open doors for more voices, more access, and more meaningful engagement. Thank you for being on the show, Ms. Erica Bates, and please share with us your reasons for joining us tonight.
Well, I get to hang out with you, Kimberly. I appreciate that. And I want people to know that having a live stream show, having a podcast or virtual events brings people together. It creates community. So I'm just hoping that that gets out there.
Well, it's going to get out here because you're out here to be able to say it. Now, one of the, you know, like I said, making a community, you've made communities already. You use various software, but you also use various social media platforms. And it's unifying, right? So it's easy. Can you explain how technology can be, more specific to helping people unite and come together? What are the specific elements that you utilize?
Okay, so let's say we're using Zoom right now. Zoom, you send out people a link. You can send out a DM via LinkedIn, Facebook, and you can meet once an hour, 90 minutes. You can have a conversation with people. Let's say you have that conversation once a week with people, Tuesday nights at 7. You can have an off platform where you could meet a Hey Summit, a Circle, Mighty Networks, where you can have after conversations. So having that live element with Zoom and then taking it off, that's how we meet. That's how you can have community, and that's how you can have conversations with people.
And now some people are keen to saying, I don't want to be visible. They want to be behind the scenes. I'm kind of on behind the scenes on a radio station because they only hear my voice. They don't really get to see what I look like. Is that something to be afraid of? You know, I don't know if people have fear of it because of their ethnicity. They don't want people to see, you know, what they look like because of what they might think of their identity. But some people just aren't, you know,
I don't know. They always want to be comfortable. So you can't be comfortable, I think, sometimes if you're on tape or on camera. Any solutions to something like that?
Well, when I tried to do things in person, I was kind of upset when people would tell me no. But you know what? The internet has never told me no. Not one time. If I wanted to host an event, I could do that. If I wanted to live stream, if I wanted to do audio only, I could still do that because the internet has never told me no. And I like that about the internet. So I've been having this live stream business for over 5 years now, and nobody has ever said, you don't need to do that because it's the internet. So.
I think that's my word of wisdom, words of wisdom. The internet has never told me no. I like that. Well, I don't know if too many people could tell you no, because you're such a strong voice. She's shaking her head. Nope. But give me a little bit of information about you growing up. You are African-American. Those of you who can't see her or you didn't look at the graphic on a variety of social media platforms that I put the graphic out on. But that really doesn't matter so much in what you do, but it does matter in who you are. Can you explain a little bit about culture in your, you know, growing up Erica?
Well,
in South Carolina, by the way, in South Carolina. So that is the South.
Yeah. It's still the best state in the whole union, no matter where you are. It's the best state in the whole union.
There is one person who would agree with you on air. That's, what's his name? He has the late night show. Stephen Colbert. Oh. Are you familiar?
Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No worries. So I am from Greenville, South Carolina, and I moved a whole 30 minutes away to Spartanburg, and it's a vast difference. In Greenville, they will tell you no because of your color to your face. In Spartanburg, they will just turn away from you and ignore you. But I have none of that online. I proudly show my picture online because if you want to work with me, you want to work with me. And if you don't, it's okay. That's why I like being online, because there's like 8 billion people out there on the planet. There may be 3 billion people who actually have access to the internet, but you know what? You have access to them. They have access to you. And if they want to work with you, they will.
And it's
that's
great.
What's so nice about the internet.
Yeah, because it's almost like-minded people, because I got really started with this more so when I was forced to do so. I had written a book and I was about to go to one of the largest children's book selling locations, which happened to be in my hometown of Hudson, New York. And then it was canceled because of COVID. And like most people, when you can't be around people physically, you still have to be engaged in some way. So I found the tools and techniques to go online to do this. Hey, is that how we met?
Yep, that's right. So when I first got started, I was told to go live, and I said, I'm scared. And my coach and mentor says, do it anyway. And I was like, but I'm scared. And he's like, if you're really scared, have a guess and then do it. And I was like, okay. And after that, he's like, well, if you don't do it, we can't hang out anymore. And I was like, dang. So I was really scared about that part. So I did it. I host an online show, and I invited guests because I was too scared to do it by myself. But after I got the hang of it, of talking with guests, I got to do it by myself.
So I was one of your guests.
Yes, that's right.
I remember.
Multiple times.
Well, see, and now I'm returning the favor. Actually, we tried to do this about 12 months ago. About a year ago or so. I'm not sure how, things work out because, again, this is the time for people to share their voices, right? And before, I think people would only do it on one platform because it was easier to navigate one. But now they have software where you can be on every platform at the same time, right? And I know that some people are utilizing that. What's his name? Who used to be on CNN? He is on YouTube Live, but then he streams things to his platforms on, I don't know if it's Facebook, but definitely on Instagram. And I don't know if he does LinkedIn. So you're shaking your head yes. Go ahead. Tell me what's yes about that.
I love multi-streaming. So
there's a word for it.
Yes, multi-streaming. So not just streaming live on one platform. You can stream live on many platforms at the same time. So let's just say you want to go live on YouTube, but you don't have the platform like a OneStream Live or an eCam or a Restream to have that multi-platform. So you'll have to copy-paste the link, or you'll have to upload to every platform. If you have the ability to multi-stream, you don't have to do any of that. You go live that one time, and that's it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. This is a really great time to segue, because in order to give, you can give online too, right? There's a way you can go to wayfarm.org to give. You don't actually have to just use a phone number. So I'm going to throw it back to Garrett real quick before we introduce our next guest. And Erica, I'm going to ask you to stay because we're going to have fun time during the round table where we just have an open conversation on whatever comes up. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, great. Garrett.
Thank you, Kimberly. Certainly. You can go to WGXC.org or wavefarm.org, as Kimberly said, and you can click the red donate button up at the top left of your screen and donate until your heart's content, your amount of your choosing, whatever you would like to and or are capable of doing. Then there's also 518-697-7400, or you can write a check and post it the old-fashioned way to care of Wave Farm, 393 Main Street. Oh, pardon me. It's P.O. Box 13. It's care of Wave Farm, P.O. Box 13, ACRA, A-C-R-A, New York, 12405.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome,
and
Kimberly.
Please give, because if you don't give, then we can't be here on air. So thank you for your support in advance. So I want to talk about the talk term. That's our next segment intro. And our talk term today is a holiday called Juneteenth. And in New York State, which I don't know, I'm kind of thinking is one of the best states in America myself. Nothing's wrong with South Carolina, but New York, you know, it has me in it. No, I'm just joking. All right. So Juneteenth is a holiday in New York State. Thursday is the day for celebration. And I just want to mention that not everyone still knows about Juneteenth. So I have a question for you, Garrett.
Certainly.
Is it okay to say happy Juneteenth? What are your thoughts on that?
I would say so, because it's about moving forward and joining together. But I understand if there's different perspectives on that.
Well, I would say you can say happy Juneteenth, because what's wrong with, you know, telling people to be happy?
Exactly.
You know, it's not like you're saying miserable Juneteenth.
That would help more on an even daily basis as well.
Well, I was having a conversation with a few colleagues of mine today, and I'm like, why don't they do this with Juneteenth? Why don't they celebrate Juneteenth on the Friday in which the June 19th comes up on? That way you have that long weekend and you could do things on that too. But, you know, as long as we get the holiday off, I don't think it matters. So Juneteenth, for those of you who aren't very certain of what it still is, again, it's the time that enslaved people recognize that they were free from their enslavement in America. And this is a good time, if you're not sure what to do, is to focus on being an ally to someone somewhere and to educate yourself on not just what Juneteenth is, but the people who were freed from this experience. And we use terminology all the time to say different things. And so we are gearing away from calling people slaves to those people who were enslaved, because being a slave is not something someone was willingly doing willingly. People were forced into slavery. So they were enslaved, but not slaves. They were human beings and individuals. So that's another way of looking at what you could learn on this wonderful holiday.
Yes.
In New York. And
for
I would like it to be a national holiday, but we know how things are going. And I want to say that statement with the understanding that our next guest, Mr. Mike Green, is going to help us with all of those types of conundrums when it comes to being an African-American during that time period and up until now even. So who am I talking about? I'm talking about Mike Green, and sit back because I have something to tell you about him. He is a nationally respected cultural economist, strategist, and co-founder of Common Ground Conversations on Race in America, where he leads co-learning experiences that unpack the racialized political dynamics in society. He spent years, decades, helping organizations from school districts and city governments to healthcare systems and major corporations understand how race and economics intersect. Through his unique co-learning model, Mike guides teams in developing deeper, more informed approaches to equity and systemic change, always grounding his work in history and real-world data. With a background as an award-winning journalist and editor, Mike has a talent for breaking down complex topics and making them resonate, which is why he's here. He's a frequent speaker and host. He brings deep insight into the historical economic roots of systemic inequality. And tonight, for you, we'll share his thoughts on the Negro Revolution during the show. Welcome, Mike Green. We should have a, you know, roll. Oh, look at the love. We're showing love. Yes.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, Mike. So just share with our listeners here who you are, a little bit that you might want to share about yourself that I didn't already say, and how you found yourself on Race Talks tonight.
Well, I'll stop talking about myself because you talked enough about me. But I'm here because Americans don't really know how to talk about race productively. And I'll say that again. We don't know how to talk about race productively. We talk a lot about race, but we don't talk about it productively. Mm-hmm. And so it's ironic because race is the foundation upon which this nation was born. It's ingrained in the laws, the economic systems, the public policies, and private sector practices across the historical timeline. Now, I want to do a couple of things before I go into giving you some background. First, I want to say I'm glad you mentioned Juneteenth. There's a wonderful documentary called Juneteenth, Faith and Freedom. Mm. Juneteenth, Faith and Freedom. It's on PBS. Everybody can get it. It's free. Just sit back and watch.
Okay.
And you will learn more than you ever knew about Juneteenth.
Awesome.
Faith and freedom. So that's first thing. Second thing is that when we talk about race, we have to understand that we're talking about race as an abbreviation. And what do I mean by that? Well, race is an abbreviation for racial hierarchy. Racial hierarchy, which is the valuing and devaluing of humans by this mythological construct of race and white supremacy that white people invented. It's not a biological thing. It's a mythological construct. So race is about racial hierarchy. So when I talk about race, I have to start with the term, understanding that when I say race, I really am talking about racial hierarchy,
yes,
that valuing and devaluing of humans by this mythological construct of race and white supremacy. Now, there's a lot of, I live in Oregon, Southern Oregon, emphasis on Southern, y'all from the South, y'all know what that means. So at the end of the day, white people around here don't like talking about race. And I find that ironic because it wasn't until three generations ago that white people stopped talking about race.
Mm.
We are 12 generations from the first American Revolution. We are 8 generations from the second American Revolution. And we are only 3 generations from the third American Revolution. You gave a hint to what it is. I'm going to tell you in a minute. But after the third revolution, white people stopped talking about race in the way that they did before the third revolution. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, let's go back to the Civil War. That's 8 generations ago, okay? So there's a book called The Laws of Race as Connected with Slavery. Raise your hand if you ever heard about it. You probably never heard about it.
My hand's
not
raised.
Sidney George Fisher. Now, who was Sidney George Fisher? Sidney George Fisher was famous. So was his book. In fact, he was an attorney, he was a researcher, he was a poet, he was a writer, he wrote 2 books. And he was an endorser of President Lincoln.
Ah. Now,
Let me tell you what Sidney George Fisher wrote in The Laws of Race. I'm just going to give you a little bit, a little tidbit. Okay. And you go look up this book, The Laws of Race as Connected with Slavery. He said this: to understand slavery, therefore, we must study the nature of the white man and of the Negro. Out of the principles of their respective organizations, we may be sure slavery has grown and by them will be controlled. Those principles were impressed upon each by divine will. That's God, y'all. And the consequences that flow from them have the same source. So whatever consequences came out of that, that's God, okay? He says, of these races, the white is the highest in scale, the black the lowest. The white alone possesses the intellectual and moral energy which creates the development of free government, industry, science, literature, and the arts, which we call civilization. The black can neither originate, maintain, nor comprehend civilization. He is by nature a barbarian, and when in contact with the white race, he naturally and willingly yields to it and becomes its servant. The two races have exhibited these characteristics in all ages, and the white race must, of necessity, by reason of its superiority, govern the Negro wherever the two live together. Now, that's 1860. Now, the year Abraham Lincoln gets elected.
That's interesting. I don't want to stop you, but I wanted just to circle about how that affects us right now, too. Right? Because the current administration is looking to reinstate Confederate statues and return to that time period. So I just want to bring people into what you're saying. It hasn't gone away, what you're talking about. So if someone's trying to gloss over and say, that's the history. No, that's today. But I'm going to give you the floor again.
That is today. Now, let me take you a little bit further forward here. Let's go to right after Lincoln gets assassinated in 1865, just weeks after he signs into law the Freedmen's Bureau. Another president takes over. That's Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson in 1867 gives a speech to Congress. And Andrew Johnson is so mad about the Freedmen's Bureau, which he tried to defund, he tried to get rid of, he tried all the stuff. He's so mad. Mm-hmm. He gives a whole speech on it to Congress. Y'all ain't read this speech. Y'all should read this speech. He says, I'll just tell you a little bit. He says, it is not proposed merely that they, meaning the Negro, shall govern themselves, but that they shall rule the white race. He goes on, he says, Negroes have shown less capacity for government than any other race of people. And then he says this, the business in the South is paralyzed by a sense of general insecurity because of the terror of confiscation and the dread of Negro supremacy. Now, these are two things you have to understand. After the Civil War, there was this dread of Negro rule and Negro supremacy. There was a backlash.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make sure that we're letting the audience or the people who are listening know that, of course, Negro is the black American, right? That's the terminology at the time. And also, again, bringing it full circle to now, because you're going to talk about economics, we know that, or I don't know if we know, I know, that politically speaking, you had Lincoln who actually had as a vice president someone who was not of his political party. So he had no real need to continue Lincoln's work.
That is absolutely correct. He was from Tennessee, and we still see what's happening in Tennessee today. Now, let me go back, because I mentioned the American Revolution. That's the first revolution. The reason why we have to understand the first American Revolution, the second American Revolution, and the third American Revolution is because when you understand what those led to and the question that was asked after each one of those, you will then understand the quintessential question that white America has been grappling with since the founding of the country. Now, let me tell you about the first American Revolution. Y'all know what happened. 1775, revolution starts. 1776, they declare Declaration of Independence. By the way, that did not apply to anybody but white people. Mm-hmm. According to Roger Taney, 1857, Supreme Court Justice, who gave a very lengthy ruling in the Dred Scott case, talking about the Declaration of Independence, was not for black people, whether slave or free. Absolutely. It wasn't intended for us and never was intended for us to be citizens of the whole United States. The only people that were citizens of the whole United States were white people. And they told you that.
And Frederick Douglass mentioned that in his speech, where, exactly, you know, what right, has Frederick your Douglass. Your holiday do? What has your holiday to do for me? Something like that. I'm rephrasing. Okay.
What is the 4th of July?
Right.
Yes. What is the 4th of July to me? So after the American Revolution, there was one question, one. And that question defined every state that joined the Union and every state thereafter that joined the Union, with only two exceptions. And that was Hawaii and Alaska, and they joined in 1959. But everybody before them had to answer this one question, and that is simply, what are you going to do with your black people? Period, cut and dry. What are you going to do with your black people? You going to enslave them, or are you going to let them run around free as second-class citizens? Mind you, second-class citizens in your state. But they will not be citizens of the whole United States. So that was the question. What are you going to do with black people? That's after the first revolution. Second revolution comes along. White people are arguing about, what are we going to do with black people? And so after the second revolution, which, by the way, Lincoln would have lost that revolution, but he listened to some folks whispering in his ear, like Frederick Douglass and others, who told him, if you're going to win this war, you better let black people fight for themselves. And so he did. He issued the Emancipation Proclamation, and when it went into effect, it did not free all the slaves.
Nope.
There were five border states that didn't secede from the Union, and it did not apply to them. Right. They had to wait to the 13th Amendment. But those in the southern states that seceded from the Union, every time the Union Army got close, those enslaved ran to the Union Army. 200,000 black men joined the Union Army, fighting for their own freedom, along with another 300,000 black people in support roles, black men and women in support roles. That's 500,000 black people fighting for their own freedom. Even Abraham Lincoln, after the war, said the Union would not have won this war were it not for black people fighting for themselves. So basically, black people saved the United States of America, and we weren't even citizens of it. And so after that second American Revolution, there was only one question they had to ask. What are we going to do with all these black people? Now we got 4 million of them.
The question, and they're the third free. Time. But the what third time's the charm.
So here's what happened. And you know this, just like I know this. Andrew Johnson becomes the president, and he wages war against black people. We had only one decade, half a generation, mm-hmm. of white radicals in Congress that centered and prioritized the economic and political empowerment of black people mm-hmm. for the first time in the history of this country.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1865 to 1875. That 10-year period of time, they passed 8 civil rights laws.
Awesome.
3 of them constitutional amendments that we're still arguing over today. They changed the nation. They didn't go back to where they came from. They mm-hmm. changed the nation that they inherited and said, this is untenable for a multicultural, multiracial, inclusive America. We cannot have a white America. We have to change the laws, not the people, the laws, the systems, the public policies and private sector practices. They did that for 10 years. But then the white radicals, God bless them, I don't know where they are today, but they died out. In 1872, here comes the Amnesty Act, allowing the South back in. 1877, Great Compromise. North compromises with the South. North gets Rutherford B. Hayes in the White House, and the South removes the troops. And within the next 20 years, 53,000 black people lose their lives. Jim Crow laws, and the nation reverts back.
Yes, and I just want to mention,
100 years we have white terrorism reigning across the nation all the way up until, keep in mind, 1963. And now, here comes 1963. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I didn't want to stop you, really, but I just want to make sure, because you're going so fast at every level, I just want to like make sure people are getting a whiff of what you said before, that Andrew Johnson was saying how black people couldn't be leaders. And yet during that period of time that you mentioned, there were many black people in Congress during that time.
That's correct, because of the white radicals.
Right.
Enabled, centered, and prioritized
right.
the economic and political empowerment of black people, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, plus multiple civil rights acts, including the first Civil Rights Act of 1866. When people talk about the Civil Rights Movement, that started after the Civil War.
Right.
It didn't start in Dr. King's day. Come on. Mm-hmm. And it's still going on. We still, that being said, he was angry that there were 17 members of Congress. There were more than 600 in local and state
yes.
seats,
mm-hmm.
black people. Mm-hmm. And that's when he was like, oh, no. They said Negroes have shown less capacity for government than all the other races of people. They shall not rule the white race. And there's this whole dread of Negro supremacy all across the South. And so you see these series of white riots displacing black people. You see lynching. You see Jim Crow laws, black codes. You see sundown towns. You see a nation at war, literally at war with white people, black people. And black people are displaced by the hundreds of thousands. And, of course, the Great Migration lasts for 70 years. That's three generations, y'all.
Well, we're still migrating.
Still migrating.
But that's for the roundtable, I think. We're going to have to go into our next segment. So you have a couple more minutes to, you know.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
100 years later, Dr. King gets on that stage. 100 years later, he says, the Negro is still not free. That's when he did his I Have a Dream speech. Before he talked about his dream at the end, he talked about his reality. What people do not know is that in 1963, six major black organizations came together and launched what is known as the Negro Revolution. And the Negro Revolution, launched in 1963, was so powerful, it was protests in nearly 1,000, nonviolent direct action protests in nearly 1,000 cities. Dr. King wrote a book about it in 1964. It's called Why We Can't Wait. His very first chapter is called The Negro Revolution. Why 1963? That's 100 years after the emancipation. That's why 1963. By 1965, the federal government wrote a report on the Negro Revolution. The very first chapter is called The Negro American Revolution, and it then proclaims the Negro American Revolution to be the most important revolution in American history. It even compares it to the American Revolution itself, and it says why. And the reason why is because unless and until the Negro Revolution comes to a successful conclusion, says the federal government, we cannot redeem the promise of the Declaration of Independence. There were three demands of the Negro Revolution, only three. One, end segregation in schools. Two, end discrimination in housing. Three, end discrimination in banking and access to capital. That's an economic blueprint. We don't even talk about those things.
Well, I think those three things really look like diversity, equity, and inclusivity in the workplace and in all spaces for everyone. That's what it seems like to me, that we are but we are going back in time, like, you know, make America great again. Like you said, some people don't want to go back. We want to go forward. And until we all unite together to go forward, we will be making those steps backwards. But that just brings us into our next segment, because you mentioned somebody's name that I like to think of as, not to think of, it's true. But I want to give it to either you or Erica. Who is the father of the African-American Revolution? If you were going to Google it, and you can if you want. If you're listening and you want to Google it, you can.
And also, if you'd like to call in, 518-622-2598 and press option 3 if you'd like to weigh into this 15 minutes approximately remaining of this program.
You better get over here to answer if they ring. But
positively.
So who would you say that would be? Because we are honoring fathers, I should just say. We are honoring fathers because Father's Day was on Sunday. And, you know, sometimes, specifically in this time frame, we are not looking at men enough, so men say, because we are lifting up women and we are demonstrating that women can be just as strong, just as intelligent, just as much as good leadership as men can be. And with that, I'm still wondering why we can't vote a woman as president. But I would imagine, Mike, you would say that that comes from an historical outlook also in those respects. And Erica, I know, I don't know if you have been a part of these groups, but technology, you know, you mentioned Zoom and how we are on Zoom, but you have 30,000 black women on a phone call, you know, on a Zoom call. So I want to take this round table to, oh, so I didn't get you to answer the question. And again, if you're listening, you can call in to answer the question, but who is the father of the African American Revolution? Who would you say it is? There's no, by the way, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just because it's on Google doesn't mean it's true. We are Google, right? You know, it's what we put in the technology that comes out of the technology. And very much like what Mike was saying, that history is one that we don't learn if it's not constructed for the power, the people in power, or for an economic motivation, correct? So answer the question and then share whatever you would like to share. A round table is for people to just to jump in and talk about something we've said or what came to their minds while other people were talking. No, Michael, you're smiling. You're smiling. You don't want to answer that question?
No, I've done a lot of talking. I thought Erica was going to speak, so I didn't want to step on anybody.
Okay, well, you mentioned it. I don't see anyone calling in. Let me see if we can go to the social media site for that question.
518-622-2598. Press option 3, please. Come on, listeners.
I mean, that's an easy. Okay, that's an easy question. Oh, let me ask you this one: a father. We're talking about fathers. Fathers. Who would be considered father of South Africa? Considered.
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela, because people think of him as bringing his community into the civil rights movement for them out of apartheid.
Revolution over apartheid, yeah.
Right. So it's not different. It's not unique what's happening here in the United States. I mean, we can look back in many different time periods on the planet and see how people are trying desperately to keep other people down that they don't feel comfortable with and aren't do not want to share the pieces of the pie with others. So I think we've lost Erica. We might have her back on. Hopefully she tries to get back on. But so Mike, or I'll throw it to you since you were paying attention, Garrett. And I don't see anyone answering on the social media platform either. So I know it's not a difficult question. He already said the answer. Mike is trying to let other people answer it. Correct, Mike? So what are your thoughts? Who would be? I mean, there's no wrong answer.
For
the father of African American history, like if you would think of the history of African Americans in America, who would the father be? If I said who would this father of soul be, what would you say?
That's a good one. I mean, there's a few you could probably think of, but Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Okay, so you said one. Father.
Dr. Martin Luther King was the father, he was the leader of the Negro Revolution. For me, I look at W.E.B. Du Bois, the first black man to graduate with a PhD in history from Harvard. I would look at Carter G. Woodson, the father of Black History Month, and you know, the author of Miseducation of the Negro, and the second Black man to graduate from Harvard with a PhD. I would look at James Baldwin. For me, the men whose voices ring loudest, Marcus Garvey was another one. Malcolm X was another one. We've had some luminaries throughout history. A. Philip Randolph. These men taught us a way forward when there was no way.
And
so these are the folks that I look at.
Yeah, I like that. And again, doesn't have to be just one father, right? Because,
correct.
You know, it takes a village of people to raise anything up. So it could be more than one. And then we have intersectionality. So, you know, we have people or men who can be fathers of different things in a different period of time. What about father of technology? Since that's another one of our discussions. Anyone?
The father of technology.
Father of technology. Again, and there's not one right answer. There could be many more than one answer. Erica, one was in his wheelhouse and the other one, I wanted to try to get one in your wheelhouse. And again, people who are listening, you can Google it if you want, whatever. Just give me why you think so.
I'm going to go with Nikola Tesla. Because his patents were stolen. That's all I got. If you got anything worth stealing by the U.S. government, you got something.
Mm. Yeah, you would have to definitely hide some of those things. anybody else want to join into father of technology? You know, I don't know if he's the father of technology for me, but I didn't like this product initially, and I'm using it now. And I don't even know if I like it now, but I'm using it now. And I'm going to go with something very recent and say the Apple guy who passed away, and they took his company from him, too.
Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
Steve Wozniak. Steve Wozniak. I can't say his last name.
Well, he's the one that started it, but
he made the actual product.
Right.
Jobs was the guy who sold it.
Right. And kind of made it look the way people might want to purchase it. It was making technology beautiful. It's almost like, you know, trying to sell perfume or something. You know, the best perfume isn't the one that smells the best. It's usually the one that costs the most for some reason. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that could have made this product, but how do you make it better? I think, and the fact that, you know, it's like we're doing the Jetsons on this product, that I think it's so, because it's revolutionized, right? It's not just a computer anymore. It looks a certain way. And then, of course, he took it and put it into a phone and all that good stuff. So to me, I think that's, and then you have children of every ethnic group in schools, children in America, with a cell phone in their hand. That means they have so much power that if they only knew how to use it in a more productive way, they're awesome, you know? So that's why, for me, that. Mike?
I'll give you something that we use every day. We don't even think about it. Black inventor.
Go ahead.
1923.
1923?
Eric Morgan invented the traffic light.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I would not have known that.
I do not
See,
know
that's
that.
Why you're here, Mike. Give us something we don't know. The traffic light. I had a question about the traffic light, though. Why aren't there primary colors? You have green, yellow, and red. Those aren't primary colors. But that's me segueing into something else. We are coming to a little bit of the end of the show. So I want to make sure that we conversed a little bit about what is important for us right now. So if there's any last statement you want to share or let people know how to maneuver this time frame with what you guys are most known for or what's relevant in your lives. So Mike, we ended with you. So we're going to start with you for the end.
Okay. Well, I just launched a mini course that everybody can take at my website, commongroundconversations.com. That's commongroundconversations.com. It's a mini course. And basically, it takes you through those three revolutions that we talked about, the American Revolution, the Civil War, and the Negro Revolution. And if you don't remember anything else from this conversation, remember this. There's only one question asked after each of those revolutions, and that is, what are we going to do with black people? And after the third one, which was the Negro Revolution, we had three demands: end segregation in schools, end discrimination in housing, end discrimination in banking. That's what you can do for us.
Definitely banking. Okay, and Erica, thank you for that, Mike.
I would say start a community. If you're doing anything, like Mike, you just said you're having a mini course, why not have a community to go along with that? Community is so important, and it helps you build upon what you've already started. So for everybody out there, if you're doing anything, have a community.
Right. Like, I would say that's great, because so Mike is having his community online in a course, a mini course. I would imagine it's free, Mike, or is it?
It is not free.
Oh, well, let's not talk about how much it costs. It's worth it. There's value there. But there are certain things that you can do and learn for free. There are some free communities.
A positivity community.
Myself with Right Acts. It's another segment. What to do in the face of political unrest, which is what we find ourselves in this past week, weekend, and it's going to be a lot more in the future. We're going to have people who are marching, speaking, protesting, and sometimes just having a good time being together in the community, right? So I want you to be aware. Read and research. When I say get your R&R, those are the two things. Be visible. And we mentioned earlier on that some people want to hide when they're on like Zoom, or they don't want to be visible. They don't want to be seen. You don't be visible in a way that in which you might write something. You might want to speak about something. You might want to just attend something. And another way of saying that is just show up. And, I mean, you can have, you know, something over your face, covering your face, and still be visible. And then the third thing, right acts that you can do in the face of political unrest that we are finding ourselves in is support. Whether you're supporting Mike in his, I mean, delivery of all of this great knowledge. And I read over 150 books, a lot of it on that time period between enslaved the first enslavement in the 1500s to up to now. And so I can say everything he says, I was just shaking my head yes to, because it's all right. It's all correct. It's all truth with a capital T. So be supportive. Support people like me on the radio by donating to this nonprofit radio station. Prepare yourself with other with access to knowledge and or support with your time. You are an amazing individual. There's something about who you are and what you know you can do that you can do for others. So those are the three things: be aware, be visible, and support. Thank you so much to my guest talkers. If you want to know how to connect with them better, go to my website, www.kimberlyirwin.me, and you can find their names. It's Erica Bates and Mike Green. They're very visible, so you can connect with them that way. And I just want to thank Garrett Roche here, who is the podcaster for the Roche Solid Truth, where positivity is at its purest form. Take it away, Garrett. This This is no thrones, no crowns, no kings.
Opposition to the tyranny that threatens our very existence as a country. And this kind of gathering can unite us in a moral movement to save America. And we will not stand down, not now, not ever. Because the truth is, when it comes to the need to stand up for the Constitution over a ruler who would ignore the court, we are indivisible. When it comes to the need to repair breaches between those who have health care and those who don't, we are indivisible.
You just heard a rebroadcast of a past.